Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
Thanks for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming at you live from the back of Roberta's. You are listening to a special community session on the recently introduced GE labeling bill. I am your host today, Leah Eden, and we are on the line with Patty Lavera, the Assistant Director of Food and Water Watch. Welcome back, Patty.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yep, we are excited to have you back on the line. So last time we spoke, we had a conversation about the FDA's comment period related to the GE salmon and, you know, regulations around GE food in general. And since then, the comment period has closed, and shortly after, this new federal legislation was introduced that would require the labeling of all GE foods. So I wanted to have you back. I was hoping you could give me and our listeners at the network here a little background on the Genetically Engineered Food Right to Know Act. You know, exactly, like, what is it calling for? What is it all about?
Sure. So we have now a bill in Congress, so it would cover the whole country. There's been a lot of efforts around the country in different states, including New York, to work on bills at the state level that would require this labeling, but this has now also been introduced into Congress, which is great. And so it is similar, you know, the same idea as what a lot of the state bills and what the ballot initiative in California last fall would do, which is to say if a food is genetically engineered or a processed food that is made of ingredients that are genetically engineered, it would have to say so on the label. That's the short version.
Okay, and I want to talk a little bit about, like, what exactly that means. You know, I looked at the bill language and kind of made my way through it, muddled through it a little bit, and it calls for the consistent and enforceable standard for labeling of foods produced using genetic engineering, including fish. And I'm wondering sort of why it calls out fish specifically. Like, are there foods or food ingredients that this bill would not cover?
So some of this is how the laws around food get written, right? And it's not always the clearest process. So
I have
all
to
those
agree.
References to sausage making when we talk about legislation. So to do this, the mechanism that the law would use is we have an older law called the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, and it basically says that, and a lot of the state laws do this to an equivalent state law, and it basically says unless you put this label on, the food is misbranded and you're not allowed to sell misbranded food. The reason they're spelling out things the way they are is just so that everybody's starting on the same page about what is covered. So they're, you know, in the bill they're defining what genetic engineering is. They're saying, you know, so that there's no confusion and people aren't saying, well, I didn't think I was buying that product and I wouldn't have to label it. So they're defining what it is. The reason that they're pulling out fish in particular, so a lot of folks are used to GE crops, so they're used thinking about corn, soybeans. Now we have canola and alfalfa, and so we have other, you know, crops that you plant in the field that have been genetically engineered. So we're waiting to see what happens, but the FDA is thinking about approving a genetically engineered salmon. So that would be the first food animal where the animal itself is engineered, and so that's why they made sure to list fish there. The one thing we wouldn't get covered necessarily with this bill from Congress and from some of the state bills is meat. And that's just, and it would be meat from animals where the animal wasn't engineered, you know, the cow or the pig wasn't necessarily engineered, but if it ate corn or soy or alfalfa that was genetically engineered. That's one piece we're going to have to do more work on, even when these bills pass. And it's really, it's a logistical situation with the way we regulate those foods, is kind of getting all these laws to match up.
Right. And I want to talk a little bit about that. But first, I want to go back just for a moment. And, you know, you mentioned the GE salmon. We've been doing a little bit of coverage of that here at the network. And I'm wondering, is there a connection between the timing of the introduction of this bill with the FDA comment period? Like, is that just an interesting coincidence, or is there a connection there in your mind?
There's definitely, I mean, I think the connection is that these issues are finally getting the attention they deserve. Like, you know, consumers, if you'd ask them for the 15 or 20 years we've been kind of dabbling with these crops, you know, being in our food supply, consumers have always wanted this labeling. But it's really risen up, you know, as this big, important issue after the ballot initiative in the fall in California, and it's kind of sweeping across the country. So, you know, I don't know if it was a deliberate decision to pull the trigger and drop the bills on the day before the salmon comment period ended. There's been a lot of discussions, and they did a lot of work in those offices to get the bills, you know, where they wanted them before they introduced them. So I think it was kind of just converging events. And I think the controversy and the interest in stopping this genetically engineered salmon has really brought new people to the effort to call for labeling. So people are doing both, because I think the concept of a genetically engineered salmon really elevated the issue and really elevated the need for this labeling.
Right. And, you know, I think you bring up a good point that, you know, this is not a new issue, but that there seems to be this, like, storm of conversation about it, and this debate and this really intense conversation, which I find very interesting. And the current bill, the Genetically Engineered Food Right to Know Act, it's a little bit of a long title there. It's the first federal GE labeling bill to be introduced in the Senate since, I believe, 2000. But there have been previous attempts, and there have been previous calls with sort of this mandate on labeling. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what's potentially different about this bill, what's different about today's political climate, like what's happening now that wasn't happening with previous attempts.
Yes. Yeah, so there was a bill in the Senate. You know, it's been about a decade now, and all of this time, every year, Dennis Kucinich in the House. He was from Ohio. He would very regularly introduce a GE labeling bill, and he's no longer in the House. He lost his seat, so we have a different sponsor in the House bill. But they've had that continuity. We've always had a bill for a long time in the House. So I think what's different now, and you know, there's lots of work to do to pass these bills, whether it's in a state legislature or whether it's in Congress. We have a lot to do to take on some pretty serious industries who don't want us to know this about their food. So we're taking on the biotechnology industry, the big food processors, in some cases the grocery stores. And they know their way around Washington. They know their way around these state capitals, and they spend a lot of money. So that's why we don't have the labeling already. It's a really common sense thing. You ask consumers, they want it. Every poll about it, poll is really high. But, you know, these are political venues, and these companies, you know, get a lot of power because they spend a lot of money. So we're going to have to do something different. We're going to have to use people power to overcome that. What's different now, I think, is that people power. So people all over the country, there's a lot of grassroots work going on. There's a lot of work going on in state capitals. And we think that can also translate to work on Congress, too, to finally, you know, push these bills through.
Right. And so, you know, you bring up a couple of different industries that will or would be impacted. You talked about the biotechnology industry, potentially groceries, food manufacturers. And I want to talk a little bit about, you know, if this bill were to be passed and label was a mandate, who is actually responsible for making those changes? So, you know, would it be a company like Monsanto or Aqua Bounty, or would the responsibility fall on the food companies or the grocery store? Sort of where along the chain does that actually happen?
So it's a good question, and kind of the key concept is kind of the chain, right? So somebody knows this at the beginning of the system, right? You're planting, you're buying seeds to plant to grow corn or soybeans. You know what seeds you're buying, and it is labeled, and so that information needs to be passed along the chain. I mean, that's the bottom line. So in terms of where the law, you know, kind of hits, it's talking about where the food is sold at retail, is it labeled properly? But the those grocery stores who are buying it from someone are just going to ask for that information to come in with the food. If you think about, you know, your shopping experience, an enormous amount of food comes out of a box and goes on the shelf. Like, the grocery store doesn't have to do anything to it. They don't even put price tags on it anymore, right? Because it's all scanned. And so that's going to come from the food processor with that label on it. They would change their labels and say, you know, contains genetically engineered ingredients or whatever the law would tell them. The grocery store would have to do it for things like, you know, sweet corn or for apples or something like that. If we started to have those foods, they don't, apples, for example, are in the pipeline, but we don't have them on the market yet that are genetically engineered. And stores, we hear a lot from stores about how this is the worst thing that could ever happen to them, but they do it for other things. We do this already for country of origin labeling, and they can put it on the sign that says the price. Lots of products, produce is coming into stores already with the little price lookup stickers on there. You could add this to that sticker. So there's ways to do it. Lots of the laws give them a transition period to figure it out. But the key is that the information, you know, passes through the chain. And the bigger enforcement issue, you know, for regulators going out is that they see a product that doesn't have a label on it, and they decide to do a spot check. They're going to say, show me that this doesn't need this product. And that can be done. All the laws are spelling out how that can be done. It can be done with basically statements, you know, from the farmer, from the handler saying, I believe this to be non-GMO, therefore I'm not putting a label on it.
Okay. And, you know, that does bring up an important issue around enforcement, and the bill specifically talks about that in its language. But, you talk about spot checks kind of at the grocery level, but who has the authority to enforce? Is it the stores themselves? Is it the USDA, the FDA? Kind of where does that power come from?
So, it's going to change then what bill passes. If in some of the states, state by state, they do it differently. Sometimes it's the Agriculture Department. Sometimes it's the Department of Consumer Protection. In this bill in Congress, it would be the FDA because they're attaching it to a bill that the FDA enforces, the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act.
Okay. And do you have a sense of is there a conversation about what the label would look like? Is the bill include that? Is there a conversation there? Or is it sort of the first, let's get it through. Second, let's discuss, logistics and how that would actually happen.
There's a little bit of both. This is true of almost every law that gets passed. There's almost always something to be done afterwards by the agency that's actually going to use the law. You know, the nerdy term we use down here in Washington is rulemaking. That's the rulemaking process. So you pass a law and then you make the rules to put that law into effect. So there will be some specifics that would come out of that, but the law does kind of lay out the bare bones of what it has to look like. So it's defining, you know, what it applies to. It's using the term. It's defining, you know, what is categorized as genetic engineering. And then we'll reach a point when the law passes and FDA has to put it into effect. They'll have to write some procedures about, you know, is there, very specific rules about it can be this size font, it can be on the front, it can be on the back. Some of the state bills we're looking at have very specific language about that. And that's all the kinds of stuff that changes as the bill moves through before it gets passed. But there would be some conversation about how this federal law would be implemented, and that would be public comment. You know, so there would be steps that you would work through to figure that out.
Okay. And one of the things that I was trying to kind of wrap my mind around was, you know, we talk a lot about sort of language and you know, it is a bill, so the language is fairly important. And I'm wondering, is there a difference between talking about GE, genetic engineering, as an ingredient versus a process?
It's a good question. Yes, there are some differences. So I think people know what ingredients are, right? So you're making soup, and there's a bunch of things you put into that soup, and they stay in there. And so it's important because a lot of the genetically engineered foods that we run into as consumers are kind of, we talk about them being hidden, right? So it's the sugar that comes from sugar beets that might be in those cookies. It's the oil, right, that was made from genetically engineered soybeans that were used to make those chips, right? And you're not looking at that bag of chips thinking, oh, this potato was, you know, you may not be thinking about the other ingredients, right, but there might be hidden GMOs in there. So that's one reason that, you know, the bills are talking about ingredients so you don't miss something. And then the concept of process is, you know, if you're buying a salmon and that salmon was genetically engineered, you know, that's important, and it's almost a little more clear, like the whole fish was genetically engineered, this is the fish, you put a label on it. The final piece, just because everything in food has to be complicated, is there's a question of if you use something And the terminology that gets used a lot is as a processing aid. Do you have to label that? And so one of the examples would be if you use something to make a product, but it doesn't stay behind, so you used an enzyme to make some kind of chemical reaction happen, but it kind of gets used up, and if you were to test the food, it doesn't stick around behind it. Should you label that? And different, you know, there will be conversations about that if we pass this law and we're figuring out what the rules are, if you know where you draw those lines.
Right. I mean, it is interesting as you start to get deeper and deeper into the complexities, you start to realize why this is a challenge and maybe why it's taking a little bit longer than some people would like. Well, we are just about out of time, but I want to go back just for a minute to you were talking about what isn't included. And you spoke about how, you know, meat that isn't GE itself, but maybe 8-GE crop as part of its feed isn't labeled. The bill doesn't seem to apply to, restaurants or potentially like school or hospital cafeterias. And I'm wondering if you could just, you know, talk for a minute about strategically, are those things left out of a bill for certain reasons? Is it like step one, step two? Is it about the complexities of the regulation? Kind of what's the thought process around, you know, leaving certain things out?
Yeah, and there's different, you know, examples that you just gave, there's different reasoning, but that's the short version of it, yeah. So sometimes it's just the way our existing food laws are structured, right? And you have to work within that framework, especially in the short term, because it would take a long time to redo the food laws generally. And so we split up. We have different laws for meat and poultry, and then kind of everything else. Those are different laws. And so the meat and poultry, you know, aren't necessarily going to get covered in this first go round, just because it's a different law. And it's, you know, if you didn't engineer the animal itself, where are you drawing those lines? So it's just one way is to get this moving, to do these other foods first. The restaurant thing, I mean, in your experience as a consumer, if you think about it, restaurants are kind of in their own realm. I mean, it's taken years and years and years of efforts to just start to now get like calorie counts on, you know, restaurant menus, where we've had them on nutrition facts on food labels and grocery stores for 20 years because we regulate restaurants differently and they're just not subject to all the things that a grocery store is subject to. So some of that is just that we're fitting into existing policy and existing law. Because that's the easiest way to make some change, right? And it usually is going to have to be another round to get to like a restaurant venue.
Right. No, I mean, that certainly makes sense. Is, you know, in politics and in creating bills, you know, you kind of have to put one foot in the other and make a first step and a first change and then kind of continue on that process. But, you know, you talked about looking at this bill specifically. There's still a lot of work to be done. We're at the very beginning stages of it. Can you explain a little bit about what are some of the challenges that it's up against, and what can someone do, you know, an individual, a consumer, if they want to demonstrate their support for this new bill?
Yeah. So, I mean, what it's up against is several industries, biotechnology, you know, some of the bigger players in agriculture, food processors who don't want it to pass because they do not want to do this labeling. They made that quite clear. These are industries that lobby in Washington. These are industries that spend money, you know, to give money to political candidates. We added it up a couple years ago, and just the biotechnology industry spent $500 million over a decade in Washington, D.C., lobbying and giving money to candidates. So these are not small, you know, these are not small opponents that we're dealing with. Having said that, the way what happens next and the way that this bill moves is you know, a mass movement calling for it to pass. So the immediate step we have is to get more people to be co-sponsors on the bills. So, you know, if your listeners are in New York, one of your senators, Senator Gillibrand, is already a co-sponsor of the Senate bill, but the other one, Schumer, is not. So you could call on him and say, hey, you need to co-sponsor this bill. That's a way you show support for a bill. It's how you build up momentum for it. And there were, I think, one or two New York City representatives who are sponsors, but it's not all of them. So people could let their member of both the Senate and the House know to be a co-sponsor. We have an action alert on our website that lets people do that. That's kind of where we're at now. Eventually, after you get a lot of co-sponsors, then you start to call for a hearing. You say, let's get this thing moving. So the first step for a bill to move would be for the committee that it's been assigned to hold a hearing, and then they can move it out of the hearing to the floor. But at this point, we need to build more support for it, and that's what folks in New York can do is call on their members to sign on.
Okay. And Patty, can you just reiterate if people are interested in either, you know, reaching out to individuals to ask them to request co-sponsorship, where can someone find that information if they don't already know the right people to get in contact with?
So we have an action alert for people if they want to just go straight to the action. They can go to foodandwaterwatch.org and take action. If you want to look at the bill or read it, see if your member might be a sponsor. The easiest way to do it is to go to the Library of Congress, which is thomas.loc.gov. And in the House, it's H.R. 1699. And in the Senate, it's S809. And that'll take you right to the bill. It'll show you who a co-sponsor is. It's pretty easy to use.
Great. Well, Patty, thank you so very much for taking some time to talk with us and give us a little clarity and in depth around this important issue. Here at Heritage Radio Network, we are certainly going to be continuing the conversation around this issue and following the next steps of the bill. So thank you so very much. This, very much like all of our 30 live weekly shows, are available for free as a download through iTunes or Stitcher. You can also tune in, learn more about our programming at www.heritageradionetwork.org. If you like what you hear, click that donate tab. Become a member today. Thanks so much for listening and stay tuned in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.